bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.
Hello, welcome to Bagel Tech Photo, the weekly show from the Bagel Tech Network, which deals with photography. Yes. I am Ewan Rankin, professional photographer here in Birmingham, and I'm joined by Mr. Alex Fox, who's a professional photographer in Essex. And we're going to talk the week's photography news and answer your questions and deal with anything that you want to know about photography that we perhaps know. And we'll be honest and answer if we don't. Don't worry. Hello, mate. How you doing?
I don't know.
Good lad. Be honest. Always be honest.
No, I'm very well. I've been quite busy.
Knackered.
This week.
I'm match fit, dude.
It's been productive. Tell everyone, how did your rugby match go?
It went very well. I enjoyed it thoroughly. There's some pictures up on the Old Salts Flickr photo stream, and I played quite well. I was quite chuffed. I had a few good runs, made some yards, and I've never played there, you see. I played all my rugby at Mansfield, so it's kind of like I go there and talk about rugby and everyone kind of looks at me like, yeah. Talk's a good game, but I actually played pretty well, so I was all right. Quite chuffed. Well Aches done. A bit, but not too bad. I want to play again. If they'd have called and said, you're ready for the threes this weekend, I'd have turned out, but they haven't called, so.
If they call me and say, am I ready for the 30s, can't be that good. I'll think about it.
No, I mean, the team that was supposed to come was supposed to be over 40s, and all of our team were genuinely over 40, and our eldest player was 65, and Mal, the president, and they turned up with some 35-year-olds.
Oh, dear. Well, look, when I'm over 40, yeah, I'll play.
The week in photography news, there's been a fair old bit, actually, because, of course, we didn't do much news last week because I was just on my Jack Jones. Sick note here was away. First story is if you create a similarly composed photo to another one, then you run the risk of being in breach of copyright, a copyright infringement. This story is based on the fact that this picture was the original picture from Temple Island, and they had a picture of a red double-decker bus against the London skyline with Big Ben in the background and St. Stephen's Tower and stuff, and then English Tees came along and produced this one, which is a double-decker bus against St. Stephen's Tower again. Is this copyright infringement then, Alex?
Well, I suppose by the word of the law it is, but by the word of a photographer, what a load of nonsense.
Well, I'm having a hard time with this, I have to admit. I mean, the first time I read the story and the first time I looked at those two images, I was a little bit torn because I instantly thought, well, that's complete rubbish. But the more I think about it, you know, that is not a typical street view. It's not a view from the public footpath as you would see now, because that's a Routemaster bus, which doesn't run anymore. And it's exactly the same kind of Routemaster bus against exactly the same backdrop, just shot from a slightly different angle. It's not a current public photograph. And the highlighting of the red over the black and white kind of is sort of stereotypical, isn't it? So,
yeah, but what I would say is if you had 20 photographers and you said, come up with something interesting with that sort of view and a red London bus, all right, say 10 photographers, I reckon 2 or 3 out of 10 would come up with that picture. So it's not, because it's an iconic bus, which is a word I hate, but it is iconic in the truest sense of the word, and the building is what it is, and the black and white gives it the age, and the red gives it the punch, and all the rest of it. I would say that it's not, for the very same reason I think they gave it the infringement, is the same reason I say it's not an infringement. Because you've got so few variables to play with in that type of shot that you're bound to come up with something similar. There's an awful lot of ways that, you know, you can infringe somebody's copyright by doing something very, very similar. But if you limit the amount of different variables within the you know, the type of picture you're asking someone to take, I think it's very, very difficult. The fact that, you know, literally it's a black and white picture with a red London bus of London. Two of the most London-centric images you can
I think the thing that makes me think the other way on that is, A, this is not a scene. This is not a photograph hanging in a portrait gallery. This is an image that's used to portray a product and a brand image. And if the second image had been a full-colour picture or a full black-and-white picture, I don't think this case would have ever got close. It's because of the fact they've picked out the red bus, and the red bus is the iconic brand imagery that's the key part of it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, like I say, the reason they said, yes, it is an infringement is I'm using exactly the same reason for saying it's not. So I suppose in that respect, it's a toss of a coin. But the wider one, I would have said it was, you know, they've made a modern picture because you've got Portcullis House in the right-hand corner, which is a new building and things like that. So, again, also, I think if you read the story, it's about the fact that, you know, one company in particular used the original shot for advertising, and another company has. It's because also it's the use of the picture. It's because they're both trying to use it as an advert. They're not trying to use it as an image. You know, the image means something in an advert. So, you know, there's an awful lot of bits and pieces. There's an awful lot of reasons why, in this circumstance, I can see why a judge would rule it that way, but I don't know if there's an appeal, but I would have thought, you know, you get a different judge on a different day, you're going to get a different outcome.
There we go, never mind. Interesting conversation, though, eh? There's also been a case in the past, though. David LaChapelle sued Rihanna for making music videos that looked like his imagery. And it does. I mean, it really does. There's lots of bright colours, lots of screwed up costumes and that kind of stuff. And I've actually said that some of David LaChapelle's stuff tips the nod at Charlie and the Chocolate Factory's original film. But there's a certain element of stylization. I mean, I think the real problem you're going to have a problem with is if you go for stuff like high-key styles of images, those kind of things, then you're going to get into real debates about whether the style of post-processing is something that you can copyright, and I really don't think you can.
Yeah, but I mean, that goes to the point of saying, well, look, you know, I can't teach anybody what I do, because if they do anything, if they actually take on board anything I tell them, then I can sue them for copying what I've told them to do in the first place. You know, it's the sincerest form of flattery. The 1950s movie genre, you know, that had been, it's getting a rebirth now. What do we want to do? Do we want Hitchcock's family to come out and sue everybody that's made a black and white horror film?
British Mac fan says, I don't like either of the pictures anyway. Russ says the two photos look nothing like each other, and eventually photographers are going to have to carry around a pair of smart glasses that occasionally flash up copyrighted view. D-Space. And Darren Griffin's correcting me. Thank you, Darren. Rootmasters do still run, but only on a few heritage routes. So
Hold this space, because they're bringing back the brand
there's
new
a go faster one, yeah,
and
you'll be able to get on and off very quickly without paying for a ticket, by the looks of it, from the design I saw. Never mind, eh? Fujifilm have said that sales are slowing in their decline. So I had to read that headline twice. They're saying that their decline in film sales isn't as bad as it was. You said you predicted this 2 years back, mate. Go on there, mate. Take the kudos.
Yeah, I mean, okay, thank you very much. The trouble with, I mean, I still like film. A lot of photographers still like film. There's an awful lot of very, very good cameras out there that there's no reason to get rid of them if you can still get hold of film. I mean, you shot. It's a different thing. Digital photographs. What we tend to do, various tricks. Instagram is a good example. We do various tricks to make it look like something that is still available. So I think there has been a turn back to film. A lot of my customers, who for years and years and years said, "Look, you know, I just want a picture, and you know, if digital's cheaper or quicker or easier, just do that." They're coming back. The top end of my film market is very strong. You know, 10 by 8 inch sheet film is strong. And I think I wouldn't say it's an amateur market anymore, because I don't think amateurs per se shoot in film, but people with a healthy interest in real or proper photography still want to shoot film. And as Kodak are going down, Fuji will pick up the slack. And I think
when you say that, Kodak have also announced this week, yes, they've got the Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection from last week, but they're saying that their film business is still profitable, and they're saying their print business is immensely profitable. So, I mean, you could see a very much a separation of Kodak, and I found it, there's a bit of me sitting thinking, how can you have a film market that's currently profitable? Because, yes, you've got sales, but you haven't got bulk sales, so your unit values can't be reducing as a result of that. You've got prints on your machines for coating and so on that are going to be I can't believe that all of their filmmaking machines are running at full pelt. So I just don't see how that's profitable unless they've been humping us for years.
Well, they're certainly humping us now. I mean, the cost of my film in the last, say, 2-3 years, is I would have said quadrupled, not doubled. I'm trying to say. Yeah, I used to buy boxes, and I used to be able to buy a box of film, 50 sheets of 5x4-inch film, and used to cost, I can't remember. Say it was £200. It could have been 50 quid or it could have been 500, because I can't remember what it used to cost. But say you bought a box of 50, and that was the most economical way of buying it by a long way. So what did they do? They stopped making boxes of 50 and made boxes of 10. And boxes of 10 weren't a fifth of the price. They were half the price. And then they doubled the prices on top of that. So now, it's quadrupled the price in a short time. And also my problem is Kodak don't make the large amount of film anymore. What they do, they wait till they've got a batch of, a million sheets, and then they run off a million sheets. In the old days, they would just print 100,000 sheets every day or whatever it used to be. So now they wait for batch processing. So they don't run their factories very often. There is very few of the factories anymore. And what they do make does sell because as a pro that uses film, everyone I know that uses film is, I have to get it from New York. We scour the country. The people I used to buy the film from now go to the same place in New York as I go to because they couldn't find any, and I told them where to get it.
You silly boy, you should have become a supplier.
Everyone deserves to make a living, and they looked after me for years, so I thought I'd give them something back.
Russ in the chat room says, how much harder is it to get film processed and developed than it was back in the day? Do you have to go to a special processing house?
Well, no, not special. If you go to a decent processor, they can still do it. I mean, Boots and what have you, I don't think do it, but, they never did it anyway. It normally got sent away.
Well, I mean, here's the beauty. I mean, I know Missy takes the mickey by saying that, you can get all your prints done at Costco, it's not a problem, and Costco doesn't have a great reputation for printing. I know it's certainly no photo lab. But I've got to say, my local Costco has got Wasim, who's an absolute photo geek. I've got all his monitor profiles, and I can get him to do a cracking job on any prints that I actually want. And he does film processing, and I've never done it there because I haven't shot in film for 6 or 7 years. But I would tell you that if you were going to get it done anywhere at a reasonable price, I'd take it down to him because he does a decent enough job. Save all your film up and bring it up to the bash on the 6th of July. Stuff it in with Wasim at lunchtime on Friday. It'll be all done by the time you get it from lunchtime on Saturday.
Here's something for you, Ewan. It just occurred to me. You haven't shot on film for X amount of time. I mean, I have got some. It might be in date. I'll get you some film. You've still got film cameras knocking around.
I've got film cameras, yeah, but they're all up my parents' house. I've got my dad's old 35. I've got a Rolleiflex. I've got quite a few, but the Pentax I had.
Just go out.
The last Canon that I had, I gave away.
Okay, well, I can also provide you some cameras, but just go out and shoot a few rolls of film, and I think you've forgotten what it feels like. I think you've forgotten what it feels like to have that nervousness about setting up the shot, taking the shot, the one-off moment. It's actually very, very exciting because I still have that moment. I still get a little bit, I went somewhere recently and I shot maybe, to me, it cost me £500 in film. And that nervousness of putting it in the car, going back, thinking, oh, I really hope I got every one of them right. And there's no way I know. And I get them processed. And when I open the box, that pride of going, wow, that's a
pride, not relief.
No, it's pride. Well, there is relief, yeah, because it means I don't have to do it again. But I do it on video. I do it on digital. I look in the back of the camera and go, yeah, that's all right. And if it's not, I'll fix it. It's so different. Just go and shoot a couple of rolls of film and it will remind you of why you became a photographer in the first place. And anyone else...
And if not, it'll remind me why I went to digital instead of carried on with film.
Well, there you go. But have a go.
I will.
I dare you.
Well, no, I'll quite happily go and buy a roll of film and go and shoot some off. I'll dig my dad's old rolly out because that takes a phenomenal picture. I nearly said a bad word then. Samsung have released the WB105 F150F, sorry. It's a digital camera that's got 18 times optical zoom, 24 millimeter wide lens. You can shoot it as a DSLR in a full manual mode as well if you really, really want to. And it's £199. The range of it, they reckon, is 23 millimeters to 438 millimeters optical, which I think is pretty good.
Yeah,
14.2 megapixels. But the thing that struck me about this is £199. I just don't know if that's too expensive or not.
It's funny, isn't it? If I said it was £800, you'd have gone, that's not bad for a proper camera. But it's not trying to be a proper camera, but it's trying to, in a funny word, it's like there's another level of bridge. This is the bridge between the point-and-shoot tiny little stick-in-your-pocket and the what I call the sort of prosumer compact camera range. And this is another bridge level between the two. I think if it produces a half-decent, slightly better photograph and you've got the ability to override a lot of things, I think this is a cheap alternative to one of the new Fujis or the pen cameras. I think it's a cheap, it's a bridge. It's a entry level, proper, compact.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think if you were going to buy a camera to chuck at the kids and have a play with, though, would you buy this or would you buy a Lumix? Because the Lumix is you can get I think it's an FS10 now for £69. I mean, that's a phenomenal camera. But 10 megapixels.
Oh, yeah.
Just more than enough.
Yeah, but the thing is with a Panasonic, it is the buy it, chuck it at the kids and take some nice pictures. This is the, let's see what happens if I put it at F8 at 3 seconds sort of camera. This teaches you something. This shows you something.
Yeah, true.
It's a different thing.
Buy it, chuck it at the kids and hope they don't smash it.
Well, yeah, that's another thing. You know, for £190 or £200, I'd rather buy them a Panasonic. And, you know, one of the things with Panasonic, they're pretty robust.
They are.
You know, this is just a cheap alternative to an expensive camera.
Yeah, it's the chat room wants to know if that's a piece of tape over the Samsung logo. I think Russ is right. It's just a dust thing that you can pull off when you buy it. Talking of the Fuji... it's appeared in America, in Japan. I'm reliably informed that all of that text means Fujifilm X-Pro 1, available for pre-order on Amazon.co.jp. And just in case you didn't know, 135,000 yen, which is the current price of it, is $1,700.
There you go. You're not so cocky about the Samsung now, are you?
Are you really going to pay $1,700 for the Fuji X-Pro 1?
No. I would really like to have a Fuji X-Pro 1. I'd really enjoy owning one. And if I ever have sufficient amount of money that wasting £1,700. I mean, that's... I read somewhere else about the prices of the lenses. Yeah, no, I mean, it is bordering on the... Is there no recession wherever these people come from? But, you know, there are plenty of people that will buy it. There are plenty of people that have got money that would have gone and bought an expensive DSLR and not had any idea of how to use it, that they'll go and buy an expensive... compacty sort of bridge camera that they won't know how to use it. So there is a market for this. It's just
not us.
One that, yeah, well, it would be
is
nice.
Is there anyone in the chat room would buy that?
Anyone in the chat room would buy me that.
Russ in the chat room says, Fuji's going all Apple with its pricing. Make it hip and expensive and people will buy it, they think. However, in answer to the question, would he buy it? The answer was a firm no. Absolutely not. Darren Griffin, no. Anyone else? Is there one person who's going to say yes to buying that camera at that price? $1,700. Silence.
Well, people buy hands. People spend £1,000 on a handbag. I don't understand that either.
I don't either. Well, no, okay, I don't know.
You were letting the cat out of the bag then, weren't you?
What's next? Could DSLRs be replacing video cameras? There's been a huge amount of video camera purchase within the DSLR market. The most of them now even up to the, or down to the very low end, the 5500, do 5100 Nikon 550D Canon do 1080p video. Are they a better purchase now if you want a video camera, get the best of both worlds? And don't forget, of course, DSLR prices or DSLR purchases are on the increase. It's a very buoyant area of the camera market. Are you interested? Because have you got a camera that shoots video, Alex?
Yeah, but I used it for about 5 seconds and thought, this is horrific. Right. But that's really because I don't use video. Now, what I would say about this is, I mean, there's a couple of people that I've met along the way in my photo career that, I mean, a couple of youngsters now, they've come out of university and they've set up, oh, you know, we're a video production company and, you know, more money than sense. And, you know, we shoot like adverts for corporate clients, you know, and the sort of thing that they'll show in their boardrooms to, you know, tell everyone mm-hmm. how great they are. Not for, you know, not for putting on the TV or anything. And they all use these things. It's just a case of the technology is now there that you don't need to spend £10,000 on a video camera if you want to make something that, you know, it's high quality, but it's not necessarily the ease of use as you'd get if you were doing what I would call is real filmmaking. Because real filmmaking, you need cameras that do lots of various other things other than just point and shoot and get things.
To be fair though, mate, now this is where I'm going to admit to not really taking a lot of notice to this, but I fancy the idea of having one of these cameras and having a go with it. And I got into the idea of having a look at what the accessory market is for DSLR video. There's a huge market, mate. There's an enormous amount of stuff there I had no appreciation of until I started hunting around this morning. This is an area called Red Rock, and they make nothing more than systems for holding your DSLR and using it to shoot with. There's a firm that was making, I think it's, you know, what's the thing where you try and get some money to make your first prototype thing? You know, like one of those projects where you know, and you guarantee first 10 units or something like that if you're an investor. They did thing for adjusting focus dead easy. There's focus ring clamps that go on the focus ring on the lens so that they give you an extension so it's very easy to move to adjust focus for depth of field. The effects that you can get are phenomenal for depth of field if you've got the right kind of lenses. And they're shooting TV that goes out on broadcast television with these cameras, with 5Ds and so on.
No, the point is, it's done because it can be done, and people do it to prove a point, to say it can be done. But it could always be done, you just had to spend a bucket load of money on doing it. And so, yes, it has opened up that market to, if you like, the people that want to sit at home, buy a copy of Final Cut Pro and a few bits of Adobe software and make something that resembles a feature film. I mean, I've got no issue whatsoever with the fact that they're doing it. I mean, those pictures you showed me with these Steadicam things, I mean, obviously, if you have a car crash, it's a dual purpose. You can walk around with a broken neck and not have any problems at all. But I think a lot of it is just because it can be done, it's being done. I mean, I don't know why I call him SF. Russ has said that they filmed the whole series of House. No, that's great. But they did it just to prove or show.
No, they've shot. They shot one episode of it and then they shot a whole series.
No, I appreciate it. But my point is, what they achieved with the Canon 5D Mark II is purely what they could have achieved anyway with the equipment they have. What they were just saying is, look what we are able to do with a Canon 5D Mark II. And, you know, it's never a bad thing. I mean, it's great. I think the people that make very expensive film cameras aren't really going to suffer because of the people that could have bought them are still going to buy them. This is just, like we were talking the other week about a certain, you know, the fact that certain DSLRs are on the up. The iPhone and et cetera aren't cutting into the DSLR market. It's an extra market. And I think, for instance, these video cameras, it's not going to affect the, you know, in quotes, proper video camera market. It's in addition to it. And, you know, it's like it was in the 80s and 90s when kids started making music in their bedrooms. A lot more people were able to express themselves and a lot of new artists came out and a lot of new ideas came out. And what will happen is young people will be able to do this. And let's face it, we're old and we're, you know, we're set in our ways. Kids are going to come along and they're going to make some really, really interesting stuff, which then will be stolen by film companies or the idea of it, and then they'll make some great films. But, you know, so it's going to help
everyone. There's a good point from Russ in the chat room here. There's a pile of firmware hackery going on with these cameras so that you can make them into proper film camera, video cameras. They'll run constantly and that kind of stuff. And I've got to say, I would love to have a 600D up here on the wall with a wider angle lens on it that's fixed permanently, and it was running through to shoot 720p or 1080p into the back of the Mac. You know, and you need to hack your firmware in order to do that, which invalidates your warranty, unfortunately. But, you know, why on earth Canon can't just let you switch it on and let it give a live feed? I have no idea. It's
possibly because of it will end up burning out sensor.
Ian, thank you very much for correcting me. It's Kickstarter. That's the program. There we go. Good man. Sony has developed a new CMOS sensor. It promises to enhance low light image quality. And also give you a greater depth of image and a greater quality of image at lower pixel ratings, as well as including high dynamic range movies, which I've got to say they can keep that. The code name they got for it is RGBW coding. Theory of this, mate, is that what it does is it's a backlit CMOS sensor. It lets you capture RGB as normal, but then it also captures white light on a separate sensor that's adjacent. And the theory is that the white light image capture is more sensitive, therefore it has less issues in filling in the spaces in low light. I'm a bit sceptical, I have to say. What's your thoughts?
My thoughts of, well done, Kodak, for inventing this. X amount of years ago. Why? I'm so depressed about Kodak. I wish they'd, you know. Oh, anyway. Yes, it's a jolly good idea, I think. The manufacturers need to find ways and means of making some of the cheaper products at least emulate some of the abilities of the higher end products. One of the ways you do this, you spend an absolute fortune on remaking sensors by making less pixels but bigger holes, which is the way Nikon have gone around it. Or you find a way to lower the noise in low light situations. And this is the way Sony went around doing it. So, you know, it's all a good idea. What will happen is at some point someone is going to put the two, three or four great ideas that people have got at the moment for making it work. And, you know, with a 2.8 lens, you'll be able to photograph anything you like in pitch black and get no grain whatsoever. It's all just a process. And eventually it'll all come together and, you know, we'll all be out of business because everyone will be able to do everything.
Yeah, I'm struggling technically, I have to admit here. I'm looking at the explanation of how it works. Now, I know about artifacting on low-light photography, and you get the horrible red, green, and blue pimples appear on your dark areas because, effectively, the sensor is looking for colour information. It can't find a balance between red, green, and blue. So what it does is it picks one effectively and fills in the gaps as best as it can work out. And it's wrong every single time. The idea of this sensor is that it's going to try and capture pure white light on its own. Now, don't forget, white light's made up of red, green, and blue added together. And it's still only looking for colour information that isn't possibly there to the same degree. I'm struggling to work out how... I'm working out now it's not going to put a red, green, or a blue in solid, but I can't see how it's going to do anything other than fill it in with black.
Well, no, I think what they could possibly do is instead of putting a red, green, or blue, because they're not quite sure of the level, that's why you get the dots, it's because it's not strong enough, red, green, or blue. But if you can take those points and be able to mix them with white light on the fly, then what you'll do is it's the best nearest guess of what the true colour was. But what I'd like to see is somebody go to the infrared spectrum and shoot over with an infrared light at the same time as a RGBW, and then put all that together.
You run the risk of a bit of washout there, though, don't you?
Well, no, but the infrared information is purely, if you like, a negative.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
It's purely to be able to see into things. The darker, right, the better. And then if you can amalgamate the light, I mean, we're getting into quite a lot of expense, but if you can then sort of merge that four levels together. I mean, you've got to remember with film, you know, normal film, you use three colours. With transparencies, you use seven colours. You know, and the reason transparencies are more accurate than negative film is because it's got more to pick from. You know, and this is the sort of thing they're doing here. And instead of getting more accurate with the colours with more to pick from, they're just using it to limit the errors it makes when there's not enough information in the first place. It should, in theory, all this put together, give you more accurate colour when you're in a decent lighting environment as well. But, you know, people aren't necessarily that interested in that at that end of the level. What they're interested in is being able to take a picture in the dark and it be sharp. So you'll be able to, you know, have a faster image. So your nightclub dark shots aren't going to be out of focus and blurry from movement, and you'll still get a picture that isn't completely grainy. So it's the market they're aiming for, and if it works, then, you know, they'll sell it to the iPhone or whoever's going to want the next incarnation.
Do bear in mind as well, when talking about seven colours of light, that two of them are potentially complete bunkum, and just because Isaac Newton wanted it to add up to seven because of Masonic issues or something. Just do bear that in mind.
Bunkum.
Questions. Should we do some questions? Fabulous questions, yeah, this week, mate. You're going to love them. Hi, guys. I have a D5100 after some advice from Alex, and I was looking at buying a prime lens. Do you have any advice for moving to a prime lens which would help me develop and improve as a photographer? Thanks very much. Steve in Nottingham.
Yes, I have got
one. We're just going to keep it to ourselves, though. Get a prime lens. I would say absolutely get a prime lens. You're on the right track there. But get one that gives you a lot of versatility. Prime lenses are beautiful because you don't sit still. You have to get up and move around, and it teaches you to look for better angles. If you want to get, you know, rule of thirds applied or something like that, then you can't just zoom in to try and see if you can get it. You've got to physically walk there and see if you can get the balance right on the image. So I think they're essential, absolutely essential. I'll come back on what to get, but what about you? You think prime lens is a good purchase if you've got a few quid burning a hole in your pocket?
Well, you know what? When I'm working at work, even though sometimes it means jumping, quite often I have to shoot down on things because of, you know, the cost of things. It's a lot safer for me to put things on.
That must be quite a novelty for you. You haven't shot down on anything. Hey! I'll be here a week. Take you later.
Yes, and I'm fat and bald and old. Thank you. But I will still use a 60mm f1.8 lens, even though I don't like heights. I will climb up to the tripod 15 foot in the air and lean over, and it was very scary and very wobbly, and I don't like it at all. I could just use a lesser zoom lens and, you know, go down to sort of 18mm and correct it afterwards. But if you want good, sharp, honest, clean photography, use a prime lens and move yourself into the right place.
So what are we talking about in terms of focal length then? What we're going to recommend Steve to buy? I'm going to say 50mm.
Okay. Well, I'm going to say 60 to 90 for portraiture. But one of the things I would say is spend the extra and get a decent macro prime lens, because it's got a dual purpose. And once you start getting to a macro photography, then your artistic skills are going to come up. I mean, it says ouch expensive in the chat room for anyone that's not in the chat room, but I would have said it's probably a false economy not to buy a macro. You know, I mean, look on eBay for a 50mm 1.8. You'll find if you're on a Nikon, you don't necessarily...
Brand new 50mm f1.8 on Canon is £88, and I think the 105 for the Nikon one at the moment.
Yeah. And, you know, look on, you don't even know, Amazon or someone like that. You can get a decent 50, 60 mil, 1.8 macro for, I'd say, good starting price for a second-hand one.
When's the last time you shot a macro image in, Alex?
Exactly. What day are we? No, I'm
going to... No, I shoot one a year.
Wednesday. Wow. Wednesday, I did a bumblebee that was on the table for somebody. It was a dead bumblebee, and one of my friends paints... Oh, she's probably listening. I've got a picture of a bumblebee for you. And it was on a table, so I decided I'm going to go down...
You got a commission to shoot a dead bumblebee?
Okay. A favour. It happened to be a dead bumblebee.
No, because I wondered what the rate is on those, because I've got a question about dead bumblebees. Yeah. No, I...
50,
I would say definitely go to eBay, have a look around, get yourself something cheap. The Nikon 40mm with macro is, one-to-one macro is £269, I think, if I remember yesterday looking. And you'll probably get that at under £200 on eBay, and you'll probably get it at half that price if you're talking about a used one. Make sure when you do buy off eBay, though, you get a very good, clear picture of the lens. If you've got a great picture of the glass, buy it. I've got three lenses I use commercially every week that are all off eBay. So don't be scared of eBay. And the other thing to look out for is if you're struggling for funds and you get the the £105 one or the £88 one if you're Canon, go and get yourself a set of macro tubes. Macro tubes cost you about a tenner on eBay, and they're a pain in the ass to fiddle around with sometimes, but I've got some in here. And they're great. They do a good job. No problem at all.
You've got to remember, with mainly macro photography, because of what you're photographing, if you have to get 6 inches closer, it really doesn't make any
difference. Don't trust second hand on my new camera, says Steve in the chat room. You're a dinosaur, mate. Absolute rubbish. You've got money burning a hole in your pocket, dude. Go to the second hand market, you'll make an absolute killing. Next question. Hey guys, last week on your solo show, you said that UV filters were essential for protection of your lenses. Don't they do anything else? Say, filter UV light. Thanks for helping.
Go on then, Ewan.
Steve in Nottingham. UV filters, yes, UV filters. The idea of a UV filter is that you've got coatings on your lenses and the UV light damages the coatings. So you put a UV filter on because it attenuates the UV light and it stops it from damaging your coating. I think it's the King's New Clothes myself. Piece of glass. What do you reckon?
Well, no, you get UV filters that adjust the actual tonal qualities of your photography.
I don't get that, mate. I really don't. You buy a UV filter from any shop, you don't get a wide choice. The only wide choice you get is the thread fitting for the lens, and effectively, it's another piece of glass to stop your lens getting damaged and not a lot more. Be honest.
Well, the inside your camera, all digital cameras, there's actually a built-in high-pass UV filter, isn't there? And lots of people, for some reason, which I'm not that sure of, have them removed at great cost because you can take slightly different sort of infrared-y style UV pictures.
Not that I know of.
And
yeah. I mean, you're right. I'm sure you're right.
It's not something I've ever got involved in. I mean, I'm a point and shoot man myself, you know. But UV. I mean, I'll tell you a good example. When we were on the walk, not the last walk, but the walk before the photo walk. I've got UV filters on my glasses, on my spectacles. And I shot a picture to demonstrate through the iPhone that if you shoot through your UV filters on your spectacles, you get a slightly different tonal quality to the pictures. And it was a really great picture, apart from my prescription is so strong that the actual image was slightly fuzzy. But that was because my glasses are slightly
Yeah, the
fuzzy.
Tonal quality change was the fact that all the colours merged because you're blind.
Yeah, but it was different. I mean, I could have called it artistic. Could.
Yeah.
But no one was ever going to be able to do me for copyright with that photo because no one's ever going to get one to look at.
Chatroom saying, does it adversely affect any kind of photo or have no effect at all? Providing you keep it clean, I would say that you get virtually no change whatsoever in the image, so don't worry about it. Do bear in mind, though, that it's another piece of glass between you and your subject, so unless you keep it clean, you're asking for trouble. Does it affect the pictures if it's covered in schmutz? I have no idea what schmutz is. Isn't it just a slice of glass? Yes. That's my view as well. So, but theoretically, it should protect the coatings on your lenses as well from UV light.
Oh, I just get some new lenses.
Rich man. Third question, last one. Hey guys, looking on eBay yesterday for cheap lenses at Ewan's advice, I came across a pinhole lens for £12. Is it worth buying? Thanks. Steve in Nottingham.
Yeah.
It is. Would you buy a pinhole lens, £12?
No, but I'd make a pinhole camera.
You can make a pinhole lens by getting one of your existing covers for your bayonet fitting and drilling a hole in it. Same thing. Does exactly the same thing.
Well, yeah. Well, you can just get the, what do you call it? You can actually get the, blah, blah, blah. What's the cover that goes on the front of the lens called?
No, I'm talking about the one that goes in the bayonet fitting and covers the sensor, the one that covers your body camera. Get a spare one of those and drill a hole in it and you've got a pinhole camera.
Yeah, but can't you put one on the end of the lens as well?
No, because then you've got all the refractions going to occur with the lens itself.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, I mean, there's no reason why you can't do that. Obviously, you've got to shoot on manual. And it'd be quite interesting, actually, because you could do sort of half-hour exposures.
Well, I was talking to Carl yesterday on Twitter about this, and I was saying, buy it. For £12, it's nothing. You could make your own, fair enough, but at least you've got a proper-ish lens there. There's some glass that's just going to help a little bit. But the key thing is you'll learn a lot about how light's captured with that, because you can take this thing, stick it on bulb setting on your camera, stick the pinhole lens on and open it in the garden for the entire day or something. If you've got your ISO settings right down, and just see what it captures and then mess with the ISO settings. You could have 30, 40 minute exposures, set it off, go in and make a cup of tea and then come out and switch it off again and see what you get. You'll learn an awful lot.
Yeah. I mean, I would say it's probably a good idea to buy one purely because if you've got something that screws into the front, there is at least something protecting the filter. Is it the filter I'm talking about? No, I'm not. The sensor from the outside of the world. If you literally just make a hole in your cap, any dust, fine particles will then be able to get directly onto your sensor. So it's probably worth having a sheet of glass just to seal off the sensor. But another nice thing about pinhole photography is the, I don't know what you get. I mean, it literally depends. It's luck of the draw, but you can get, I don't know, what's the equivalent? 1 millimeter? I mean, my dad tells a story when he was younger, he made a pinhole camera and he sellotaped it into a telephone box, the old fashioned. I don't know how, what were they, 2 foot square, 3 foot square? I don't know what they were. And when he developed it, he had all four sides of the telephone box in one picture. Right. Because it's so wide angle. So the things you can do, the things you can learn, and basically one of the beauties of pinhole cameras is you don't know what you're going to get. So, you can either get a masterpiece or a mess, but either way, there is an excitement.
Russ has put the lens cap would also protect the coating on the lens, but the pictures may be a little dark. Thanks, mate, for that. And Darren's saying, is there any risk to the sensor with very long exposures, say 30 minutes plus? I personally don't think you'll get any problems with exposing on bulb for 30 minutes.
Well, you would do if you were letting in too much light, but if you're letting in hardly any light, there's no processing to heat up the sensor anyway.
You'll be fine.
But
Keep your ISO down and just see what you get. Just slowly build it up, do 5 minute, 10 minute, 20 minute, 30 minute. See what you come out with. I don't think you do any harm. You gotta try pinhole, yes. You absolutely have to try pinhole, Russ. It's well worth it. Everyone should understand pinhole photography because you'll learn about photography, capturing light. Definitely.
Yeah, but then they won't listen because they realise how damn simple it really is.
We're doing ourselves out. There was a great letter today from a wedding photographer. Someone had written on her blog or something about how the hell can wedding photographers charge £3,000 a wedding or $3,000 a wedding. And she wrote back trying to justify how she earned $50,000 a year shooting 20 weddings at $2,500 a year average. $2,500 average. And I'm sitting thinking, I had a woman ring me up the other week saying, how much do you charge? And I charge $750 for weddings for the day. But for that, you get me from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. and I bring a little porter studio at the end and everyone can have their picture taken if they want, while they're in the duds, while the kids are clean and crispy and that kind of stuff. And she got it done for £400 with a bloke. And I'm just sitting thinking, but he's not running his own car. He's not buying his own stuff. It's a hobby. He's doing it at the weekends. Can't compete. That's which is why I'm no longer doing it. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, but there also is the argument about one of the reasons I don't like doing weddings is because I actually care about the customer. And there is certain people... If I did weddings, I would concentrate and only maybe do weddings because, to me, it's such an important event that you don't get a second go at. I want to be a specialist in just
doing that. She was questioning it, £450. I said to the girl, make sure he's got some insurance. Go ahead and do it. I can't compete. But make sure he's got insurance in case he cocks it up because you won't be doing it otherwise.
But the thing is, you don't know. That's the trouble. Unless you had four wedding photographers all taking the same wedding, and then you can look at one saying, oh, that one's got better pictures than that one. If you've got no one to judge the actual quality of pictures for that actual occasion on that actual day, you've no idea necessarily whether you've got some good pictures or not. You've just got pictures.
British Macfan saying, do you need a power supply if you're going to expose on bulb setting? I would say no, because, I mean, it's only the thing being on. You'll use your battery more rapidly, of course, but I wouldn't worry. It's fine. And if you put I wouldn't put a power setting on anyway, just because of heat generation or something off the battery, perhaps. Just leave it.
Yeah, but also, in a funny way, is if you're using a battery and anything is going and it is slightly overheating or any problems are starting to occur, if you're on battery, it's more likely to shut itself down. So I'd use that as a fail-safe.
What's the time limit on bulb, or is it until the battery goes down? Now, bulb is basically when you push the shutter. If you've got a proper bulb setting, you press the shutter, it opens, that's it. And then it won't close again until you hit it or until you switch it off. If you switch the camera off, it'll go off. That's it. There's no other control for it. If you haven't got a bulb setting, then you're a bit stymied because probably your ability to expose, even in manual mode, won't take you up beyond 30 minutes.
No. I mean, one of the tricks I do with bulb settings, which I do on film cameras, is I actually, because I shoot with sheet film, I've got these black shields, basically, that stop the film's been exposed. You don't need a black shield. You can just use a black anything. You could even use... It doesn't necessarily have to be black, but black helps. If you hold a black bit of card in front of the camera, then open, use B and open it up. So any shake whatsoever, don't obviously put the slide on the camera itself because you'll move it. Just hold it an inch or two in front, open it with B, then so it's already exposing, but it's exposing on black. Then take away the black card. That way you get no shake whatsoever.
Good tip.
And when you want to close it again, put the black card right on the front of the camera. It doesn't matter if you wobble it because there's no light getting into it, right on the front of the lens, and then shut it down. So use a secondary device to stop the light coming in when you open and close for bulb setting, because it really does. That tiny little wobble does
show. Yeah, a real good tip. Well done. Excellent. Good trip. Great tip. I hadn't thought that. We'll be back again next week. We've got the usual stuff going on. We wouldn't be coming back next week, though, if it wasn't for UK2.net. They are the people that keep us afloat. They are the ones that we are utterly and totally indebted to. And the whole of Bageltech would just disappear without them. They're absolutely superb to us. They have got some pretty phenomenal deals at the moment as well. We've had a good... email from the guy that we deal with in marketing, and he said, please mention the following because I think your listeners may like it, particularly dedicated servers. Now, these guys have got dedicated servers that start at £49 a month, and for £49 a month, you get a very basic start end for a server that's all yours. No one else is getting on, but the spec for transmission is extremely good, so your site's probably not going to go down very easily at all. For only £249 a month, though, you can get a server that's got a phenomenal amount of storage, 1 terabyte's worth of storage, and they will give you 100 terabytes of transfer and bandwidth per month. So you could run like a catalog store from that and never even bat an eyelid. And here's the beauty as well. All of their current dedicated server deals are still subject to our offer code. So if you want a dedicated server at equivalent $240 a month, £240 a month, you're going to get £45 a month off by using the offer code Bageltech. So a massive, massive saving there. Web hosting, of course, is a massive part of it, and there's full Facebook integration now with the web hosting. Check that out. If you've got an existing account, go and have a look at that. And the last one is Site Builder. When you sign up, pay £2.95 a month and you will get their site builder software, and their site builder software is just incredible. It's so easy to use, so powerful, and you get a fantastic looking website from the templates that they've got in a heartbeat. There's virtually nothing to do. You can do security, you can do coding, you can do paywalls and things like that, and it's all built into the software at £2.95. So well worth it. Please go and check out UK2.net. Go to bageltechnews.com, use the click through, they'll know we sent you. If you're a returning customer, still use that, and then use the offer code BAGELTECH for 15% off, and BAGELDNS if you're transferring in a hosting package, and you won't pay the DNS management charge. So please support UK2, because we would go off the air without them. They're wonderful. Thank you. Where can we get a hold of you, Alex?
You can get me, if I can remember my password, on AlexGFox on Twitter.
You can't remember your password.
No, you'll have to send it to me again.
I don't know it. Have you not changed it since I signed you up?
No.
I'm not sure. It might be in my folder stuck to the underside of my desk. I'll have a look. I'm Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, or at Bagel Tech News if you want to follow the network on Twitter. And you can get me for commercial photography at ewanrankin.co.uk. Which no one's ever bought anything off me online, which is why it's a crap site. We'll see you next week. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening.
Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.